This is The Guardian.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The results are in, and Donald Trump has won the first in the nation primary contest here in New Hampshire, making it almost inevitable that we are poised for a Trump-Biden rematch in November. The first time that's happened since Eisenhower and Stevenson fought each other twice in the 1950s. And Donald Trump, for one, cannot wait.
The reason we have support is because they are so bad at what they're doing and so evil. And they're destroying our country.
Despite coming second in a two-person race, Nikki Haley sounded upbeat at her election night event here in Concord.
New Hampshire is first in the nation. It is not the last in the nation.
So, in our final episode of this special three-part series from New Hampshire, I'm wondering, is Nikki Haley right to say we're just getting started, or is she finished? Is she admirably determined or delusional? I'm Jonathan Friedland, columnist at The Guardian, and this is Politics Weekly America. We're in the press filing area of what Nikki Haley hoped would be her victory party in the town of Concord, New Hampshire. People are just absorbing the results, filing stories, and here sitting with me are two of the finest of America's press corps. We have David Weigel from Semaphore and our own Lauren Gambino from The Guardian US. What just happened? David Weigel, let's start with you, the winner. Why did Donald Trump win here and win the way he did?
He is beloved by Republican voters in a way that he wasn't 8 years ago. He's lost a little bit of support from 2020, but not that much. If you look at the exit polling on when people made their minds up, everyone who made their minds up before the last couple of weeks, not everybody, he won them by 20 points. And you found that if you talked to voters around the state, even outside his rallies. Republicans excused every weakness he has, every investigation he's under. I had one voter I talked to today said something that echoed Nikki Haley. She likes to talk about chaos following Trump. And he said, well, he's always followed by chaos, but he's fighting for us. That's the basic sentiment of most Republican voters. And look at Republicans in the state, and we'll get into how independents can vote here and there and make a difference. Not the difference, but a difference. He won Republicans registered with the party by a 3-1 margin.
Yeah. So that brings the next question, Lauren, to you, which is, we've talked about why he did win. Why did she, it's the same question, but from the other end, why did Nikki Haley not win?
I think she always had an uphill challenge because even with the independents who decided to pull a Republican ballot today, you know, she's still overcoming Trump's huge margins among Republicans, you know, conservative, the base voters. I think there's a lot of different elements to it. You know, I talked to some veterans of New Hampshire presidential campaigns who thought she should have done more barnstorming. She did that in the last few days, but they were pretty critical of how she started the week and you know, not having a bigger footprint in the state. They were also wanted to hear more anti-Trump messaging from her, which she didn't really lean into until later. I don't know how much of a difference that would have made, but there were certainly voters who wanted to hear that fight, and she did take it to him towards the end, but there were still subjects that she wouldn't touch. And I talked to one voter who was really angry that she had said that she would pardon Trump if he was convicted. And that was something that they just thought was inexcusable.
Yeah. I mean, we'll get into all of these different aspects of it. It's amazing that after a year, really, of campaigning, Nikki Haley came here a year ago, and all that's happened in the last months and then weeks. In the end, it happened very quickly, just after 8 o'clock in the polls, all the polls were closed. It happened so fast that we actually shocked one supporter here, because it ended up being me breaking the news to her that Nikki Haley had lost.
It is, well, see, the results are still coming in. It'll take a while.
Yeah, but she's conceded now. She said she hasn't won. She I don't know if you were in there and you heard her speech.
No.
Oh, you didn't know that. Okay, so she has now accepted she didn't win. And your face looks very disappointed. That's a picture of disappointment.
I did not see that.
That's why everyone's going now. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay, then. Yeah, I didn't know that.
So now that you do know that, how do you feel that she did lose this race?
I don't know.
You know, some people obviously just reeling from it. Nevertheless, in the room tonight, they were sort of bouncing up and down and celebrating as if it was some kind of win.
Yeah, so I'm still extremely positive. You know, I was hoping for the race to be close, and it is close, especially given the last-minute dropout from Ron DeSantis. You know, it was, you didn't know how people were going to swing with that. But I'm feeling very optimistic, and that I'm happy she's going to continue on, and I'm going to follow her until I can't anymore.
And Nikki Haley said her message was, you know, we're just getting started and that we're going to fight on.
They want an election. And we're going to give them one.
Is that true, David Weichel? Do you think she's going to?
She has enough resources to continue campaigning. What the Trump campaign's trying to do, and they started in New Hampshire, is roll out all the supporters they have in South Carolina and say, there is no point in you campaigning. The governor, who Trump has joked about appointing Haley in order to put in office, the lieutenant governor he elevated to that role, the governor supports him, all the state constitutional officers support him, most of the delegation. Her argument, which is fairly new in the last few days, is that the establishment, the political elite, is always against me. This is the latest example, and I always beat them. She can say that, but South Carolina is a very different state, and the problem there is that New Hampshire is very secular. There are very few relatively evangelical conservative voters. There are tons of them in South Carolina. It is an electorate that is perfectly made for Donald Trump, and there are people who can cross over. It's a mostly open primary. But in a couple weeks, less than a couple weeks, they're going to have a Democratic primary. There are fewer voters to pull from. It's a problem that happened to her here. I would say every vote for Dean Phillips was one that Nikki Haley could have won, but many of them were. She needs to pull over people who just don't like Donald Trump, may never vote for her. Much harder to do in South Carolina than it was here.
Yeah, I mean, I did wonder, Lauren, that if she can't win here, just to, but you know, mangle the old Frank Sinatra song, if she can't make it here, she can't make it anywhere, because this is the one place that was really favorable for her because of what we're just hearing from Dave about how independents could cross over and undeclared voters. And even the Republicans, as some of them were quite Trump skeptical, South Carolina is going to be a really steep hill to climb.
Absolutely. And, you know, the religious element, it does make a difference, because here she wasn't up against that. And she was, she was appealing to people who, you know, were at least open to her message, more moderate electorate. So it's hard to see how she does this going forward. But at the same time, because it is her home state, because she's been elected twice, she can keep saying that. And, you know, certainly some of her supporters I was able to grab after the speech, they grabbed onto that resilient spirit and said, you know, we're going to volunteer for her in South Carolina. She's coming in with an army. This is her state. She can do it.
And I too, actually, talking to people afterwards, came across people absolutely lifted and cheered by that, as if they weren't going to have to go home thinking about defeat and disappointment, but instead very upbeat.
I'm not disappointed at all. What do you mean disappointed?
Well, because Nikki didn't win in New Hampshire.
Oh, my gosh.
She did so. Oh, my God. This is the best ever.
Well, we should know that it's much nicer in South Carolina this time of year than in New Hampshire.
Maybe that's why all these New Hampshire people were telling us they're going to get in their cars and go down to South Carolina. They fancy a bit of winter sun.
Actually, I have an RV, and I've got it all gassed up. I just checked, and we got the magnets on the side, and we're driving through South Carolina and helping support her campaign.
I mean, it's good to hear people wanting to stay engaged and obviously not feel as if their hopes have been crushed. But Dave, I do wonder, is it sort of delusional even for them to be thinking that? Or is there something that we're, you know, that we should be alive to, which is that Nikki Haley has this track record of beating the establishment? She's mentioned that she was the underdog when she first became governor, took on a whole lot of the fellas, as she always puts it. You know, she likes taking on these big white guys who line up against her. And this oddness of suddenly Donald Trump is the establishment candidate.
Yeah, that's a very flexible term. One thing I'd add, though, about Haley winning in 2010, her victory, she talks about overcoming the attorney general, the now governor, all these better known Republicans in primary, is she was the Tea Party candidate. She had Sarah Palin's endorsement. She put together what became a big chunk of the Trump coalition, which she cannot win now. They are with him. The segment of the party that's focused on closing the border, immigration, building a wall. She had them when she ran for governor. She does not have them now. And that's the thing. It's not that the coalition has fractured. Just sections of it really trust Donald Trump and don't trust her. The other thing I'd add is she got a lot of Democrats who flirted with Republican parties, changed their registration, moderates. In South Carolina, they voted against her twice. That is not a state where a lot of Democrats are going to say, let me send a message by voting for the governor I remember cutting funding for libraries and bringing corporations by offering them benefits. That is not fertile territory for her with the sort of voters that just discovered her for the first time in New Hampshire.
Yeah. I mean, this comes back to the problem that she is reliant outside New Hampshire on Republican voters. And the trouble is Republicans don't really vote for her. I mean, the numbers here in New Hampshire among Republicans, not all the undeclareds and so on, she's just massively behind there. And Donald Trump is so locked in with Republicans. And if you're trying to win the Republican nomination, it's pretty handy to be popular with Republicans.
Yeah, so, I mean, Haley tried here. She really played up her endorsement from Don Boldick, who lost his Senate bid after, you know, denying the legitimacy of the 2020 election. He had Trump's backing. Then in the general, he tried to say that, you know, he tried to reverse his claims on the election. So he was someone who went all in on Trump, and it cost him. He did not win. And yet Haley saw his endorsement. He backed her, and she tried to play it up. She talked about him being, you know, hard. I think she called him a hardcore conservative tonight. So she's really trying to get out the message, I am a conservative, vote for me. But it's just, it's misreading, you know, that loyalty to Trump. It's not about policy, conservative policy. It's about him, and I don't see how she peels them away on, you know, policy appeals.
Let's just talk about the speeches both candidates have made. That's always part of election night, and you wait in these hotel ballrooms for the candidates to come in. We heard Nikki Haley here in Concord, but Donald Trump is still on his feet talking as we're all talking because he goes long. He went quite aggressive, Dave, against Nikki Haley, saying, calling her an imposter.
And she was up, and I said, wow, she's doing like a speech like she won. She didn't win, she lost.
For saying that she will be under investigation, and then saying Ron DeSantis would have been too, but he got out in time, as if he makes it to the White House, he is going to turn, you know, the federal criminal justice system against her. And at one point said, I don't get angry, I get even. Mm-hmm.
Yes, and maybe that was a preview of what happened in South Carolina, because he has never had a problem in elevating a fringe story or something that maybe wouldn't pass muster by a newspaper that cares about libel, for example. He has attacked her over her birth name, which is not Nikki, it's Nimrata, something that she has brushed these attacks off. I mean, she's chosen when she attacks Trump and decided not to do that. But there is a record in South Carolina of the nastiest attack you can think of being deployed and being pretty effective. It's obviously there's a tradition here of people not winning New Hampshire and reframing their campaigns. Bill Clinton didn't win New Hampshire. This is where Barack Obama gave his Yes, I Can speech, which he expected to give because he won the state, but he ended up turning it into the start of a comeback in a long campaign. That's what she tried to do. She delivered a speech that barely conceded, said it was the start of the race, etc. We're going to keep going. It clearly got under his skin. He has gotten used to, well, for his whole career, but over the last week, he's gotten used to people losing and groveling, and she's not going to do that. So that's what brings in all the sleaze and negativity that he's very good at.
Yeah, because he does not like it if people don't fall in line. And I know there were some people in the Haley camp who were almost hoping that would happen, that they could provoke him because he shows that sort of uglier side and maybe turns off some voters. She said, Lauren, tonight, that I'm a fighter and I'm scrappy.
And today we got close to half of the vote. We still have a ways to go, but we keep moving up.
And I wondered if a lot of the people that probably you and I have both been meeting across the state, they felt she wasn't scrappy enough. She wasn't enough of a fighter. She didn't really go for Donald Trump's throat the way he would if he was in her position. And I noticed even when she's still going with this stuff about chaos follows him, as if it's like bad luck, nothing to do with him. She got it in her to be more of a fighter, because it sounds like, from what we're hearing, she needs to be.
She based her whole campaign on this idea of telling hard truths, and yet the truths that she tells aren't really that hard. They're kind of just facts that she packages around being tough. You know, she'll say, like, here's my hard truth. Like, I voted for Donald Trump twice, which, you know, comes as no surprise. So I think, yeah, I talked to someone who said, I thought it was good. He said she's trying to walk too fine a line, and she's trying to do it both, and she's trying to have it both ways, and that's just not how you're going to, you know, rile up the people you need to rile up and to get them out and get them on board. You just have to lead into it if you're going to go for the anti-Trump vote. I think, you know, she styled herself is this like a woman in heels who comes onto the stage and kicks people twice as hard. That's why she wears heels. She's got that, but I don't think we've seen it. You know, so far it's rhetoric. And I think she's been careful of Trump. She hasn't really, you know, kicked him with her heels yet.
I suppose the problem is there is an anti-Trump vote out there in the country, but it's not inside the Republican Party in enough numbers to win the Republican nomination. And maybe that was sinking in a little bit with some of the voters who we spoke to tonight, big Nikki Haley supporters who, despite the upbeat message from the candidate themselves, left feeling rather downcast.
And yet the American people say they don't want 80-year-olds running. But you know what? This is the deal. The number one and two best-selling books are cookbooks and diet books. You know, I mean, that's the thing. It's a problem.
So we're talking, obviously, tonight all about the Republican race and whether or not Donald Trump has locked it up. There was a contest on the other side among Democrats. It was the lowest, sort of most muted contest possible. Dave, just tell us, first of all, why it was a muted contest and what we should read into the numbers that did come out of it.
Yes, it was muted because of the president's decision backed by the Democratic National Committee to push the calendar around to have South Carolina vote first because it's a majority black state, because Biden won it on his way to the presidency. New Hampshire has a law that requires it to hold the first primary, and so it kept it. Biden decided not to compete in it officially, and Dean Phillips, the congressman from Minnesota, who is just now getting known, I mean, the point he made in his concession tonight is that he's been in this 10 weeks. He got in explicitly saying, I love Joe Biden, great president, he can't win, he's too old. He's very blatant about this. They thought there might be a protest vote. Are people worried about Biden? They were aware there's a protest vote of people angry about the administration's policy in Gaza. So there's a ad hoc organization raised only $100,000 or so for people, for lawn signs and for house parties saying write in Biden, and it worked. It's very clear that people showed up, they wrote in Joe Biden. He is not having the sort of embarrassing finish that Lyndon Johnson had, which is the go-to, really the only example of an incumbent president. Johnson only won by 8 points as a write-in candidate. Clearly Biden's going to win by more than that, and Phillips is going to have to justify why he's still doing this. Why is he still out there saying this guy's not electable? Should he back off and say this is our only chance of beating Donald Trump? That's not what he did tonight, but that was the campaign he ran.
There were some mutterings, Lauren, weren't they, that if Joe Biden got somehow below 50%, mm-hmm. everyone would start making the historical point that Dave's just made about Lyndon Johnson. Actually, Joe Biden, despite really taking a risk by dissing New Hampshire by moving their primary, not campaigning, not having his name on the ballot, he comes out unscathed.
That's how it's looking like. I mean, I talked to some voters today who were holding the write-in signs at at different polling places around the state. And, you know, a few of them said, like, we're sad we don't have the woo-woo fun primary. That was the quote, the woo-woo fun primary. But she said she understood it, that it was in time to elevate the voices of black voters in their party, and that's what Democrats were about. So there was some sense of, you know, maybe they're doing the right thing. And yeah, they just really were determined not to give Biden the egg on his face finish.
Now, tell me if I'm being succumbing to Nikki Haley-style delusion. But the one thought that did strike me, actually, in the ballroom as she was giving her sort of pseudo-victory speech was maybe one of the winners tonight is Joe Biden. And I don't mean because he won his primary, but rather because this whole exercise and the longer she stays in shows that there are a lot of people, in fact, a majority, who are anti-Trump, because there's a good chunk within the Republican Party, and obviously there's all the Democrats on the other side. The longer this goes on, the more you see that there is a body of opinion, maybe small. You were saying maybe it's just a quarter of Republicans. Mm-hmm. Add them to the Democrats. That's a winning number for Joe Biden if he's counting anti-Trump votes.
It is, and we could get into all the reasons that he is suffering in the polling right now. Every image from Ukraine or Gaza emphasizes that there are conflicts that didn't exist when Trump was president. That's a big problem for Biden. But what Democrats will tell you is they wanted to get to a point where if he is frozen in people's minds as the likely nominee, does that mean more attention on the oddball things he says on Truth Social? Does it mean more attention on the policies that he's talking about, which is what Democrats are really trying to pump up? They don't care about the lawsuits as much. They want attention on what would he do to health care? Would he try to repeal Obamacare again? They want to get to that point, and they're not confident is not the right word. They just think people have not had in their mind, oh, it's going to be a choice between this guy and the guy who I feel is too old. That's when they think they can win. They did get closer tonight to that.
Of course, though, I would say the big X factor are these third party candidates. And, you know, I spoke to so many people today who said that they would look at third party candidates if it was Trump v. Biden. And of course, you know, I think there is an element of, you know, when it actually becomes Trump, then you think differently. But as of right now, there was just real dislike and disbelief of that it might be a Trump-Biden rematch in 2024. So, you know, if it is, and there are these other names on the ballot, you might see some of those, you know, the quarter of Republicans you were talking about drift off to a third party.
Yeah, and that could, then we're going to be debating all year about who that hurts most, Trump, Biden. It will depend on which third party candidate. There is going to be so much to talk about that. As it stands now, it does look as if a Trump-Biden rematch is on for November 2024. And in a way, the voters of New Hampshire have made that much more likely. Lauren Gambino, David Weigel, thank you both for talking to me.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
So after really a year of focusing on this Republican contest, it comes down to the battle that we sort of always knew was looming, which is a rerun of that bitter contest in November 2020. Joe Biden, Donald Trump, two people who, either one of them wins, they will be a president in their 80s. And that is a new situation for the Republic. That's a big thing that America is facing, that prospect. But it does mean American politics now changes. It's going to pivot quite quickly, once, you know, barring some amazing upset by Nikki Haley, which is very, very unlikely. It's going to pivot quite quickly to a battle of those two. All the arguments that raged 4 years ago are coming back, including a new focus, a sharper focus, on Donald Trump himself. For a long while, he's been able to get away with quite a lot, almost below radar. The spotlight is absolutely going to be right on him, and Joe Biden's going to make sure it stays there. So fasten your seatbelts. It's going to be a bumpy 10 months ahead. But for now, it's goodbye. The producer for all three of these episodes here in New Hampshire has been Danielle Stevens, the executive producer, Jagruti Dave. We're back with an all-new episode a week from Friday. That's February the 3rd. I'm Jonathan Friedland. Thanks, as always, for listening.
This is The Guardian.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.